Mom eased off the gas and her Buick sank down the hills I knew by heart. We had to make two stops, she said, before I asked any questions. First, we'd go to my grandma's house in West Monroe. Then we'd drive to the Delhi police station. Just go meet Rufus, she said, pulling off the interstate. Tell him you're a young journalist back in town to document the real South. I rolled down the window. Christmas was only 3 days away, but thick North Louisiana heat rushed in. I stuck my hand out to feel it. This, I thought, is what weather is supposed to feel like. My mom's SUV lurched forward, and the town I'd tried to forget suddenly surrounded me. We passed Walmart and a Chick-fil-A, two Waffle Houses, and the Captain D's where we used to eat free kids' meals every Thursday night. The car slowed, and everything I'd once loved seemed small. My school, a park, the empty lot where I'd spent hours talking about boys with my best friend Ashley. Mom reached across the console and held my hand. You haven't been home in so long. Does it look different? She turned left in front of the drive-through daiquiri shop, past the Blockbuster video where I'd last tried to be straight. Our old church, I knew, was only a mile away. No, I said. It hasn't changed at all. It was 2009 and I was 26. I hadn't been home in 6 or 7 years, not since college, not since I'd promised my grandmother I'd find out about Roy. I had wanted to learn about him, but something unnameable had stopped me. At the end of the summer of 2002, I'd gone back to college in Mississippi. Then, I'd gotten a newspaper job in Portland, Oregon, a scrappy, liberal city 2,300 miles away from home. The Oregonian was a good paper with a big circulation and 7 Pulitzers, and I was a staff reporter, a position I knew my mother bragged about to her sisters. No one else in the family had the kind of job one might call a career. My mom thought I was on my way to becoming some kind of writing superstar, but the reality was less exciting than I'd let her believe. A few months earlier, the managing editor had demoted me to a night shift where all I did was listen to police scanners and write the occasional brief. I'd done so poorly at that beat, the editor had moved me again to a low-level reporting job in the suburbs. I didn't tell my mom. I mostly wrote about the Suburban Planning Commission, a wonky board that approved developments and debated the urban growth boundary. I didn't tell her that my latest article was about something called an intermodal transit facility, the most boring topic I could imagine. I'd only returned to Louisiana because I believed that a good Southern tale might turn my work life around. I decided, after my second demotion, that I wanted to work for This American Life. I had no audio reporting skills, but I thought if I produced one great podcast, This American Life's editors would recognize my talent. I'd bought a $700 recorder, watched a spate of YouTube how-to videos, and started brainstorming ideas. I considered other family stories, one about the years my mother spent trying to get on Oprah to meet the Bee Gees, another about the aunt whose husband bought a 30-year supply of salt just because it was on sale. But then, I'd remembered Roy. And I knew his was the story that would get me a new job. My mother drove and I looked out the window and understood, for the first time, that my hometown was ugly. All the stores were chain stores and every tree looked scrawny and bare. I told my mother that the West Coast had spoiled me. In Oregon, some trees stay green all year. I told her she should come see the evergreens, but she nodded without saying anything. I lived in Portland 3 years already, and my mom had never once offered to visit. I squirmed in my seat and she turned up the radio, a country station. Then we careened along the curves toward my grandma's house. When we arrived, my mom parked crooked, half on the street, half on the grass, and I stared out for a moment before unbuckling my seatbelt.